Great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when I think the nation is beginning maybe a little bit to come together in horror at what's going on right now in Afghanistan and in opposition to some of the decisions that are seem to be being made against the advice of our military and much of our foreign policy establishment and even some of our leaders in Congress. We'll be speaking in just a moment to Congressman Adam Smith, who is a Democrat. He is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He is certainly one of the leading Democrats in Congress. We'll also be speaking later today to former UN ambassador, former National Security Advisor John Bolton, who says that what we really have to be worried about is the impact right now on Pakistan, which has about 150 nuclear weapons. We will get to that and to more, but first, a great pleasure and honor to welcome the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, the Honorable Adam Smith. He represents us here in the state of Washington, and he, in fact, I'm in his congressional district, so he's my representative in Congress. As my representative in Congress, Representative Smith, do you believe that the president should extend this deadline or abide by it, even with Americans and thousands of Afghans unable to get out of the country?
Well, the commitment we got, we had a classified brief to the full House from Secretary Blinken, Secretary Austin, Chairman Milley, and Avril Haines with DNI. And their commitment was that we will not leave until all Americans, all third-party nationals who want to get out are out, and all special immigrant visa holders in Afghanistan are out. Now, we're also taking out a bunch of other Afghans while we're doing this. So that's the commitment they gave, and I pressed them on that point, that if it's not done by August 31st, we need to have a plan to stay past that to make sure that gets done.
Uh-huh. And the news is reporting today, cable news at least is reporting, the president has made a decision to the contrary, that he intends to abide by the August 31st, which is just a couple of days. The August 31st, 1 week from now, the August 31st deadline is going to be honored. At least that's what the reporting is. You think that's error?
That's the goal. And, you know, look, I mean, in the last 24 hours, they've pulled out over 20,000 people. So they are saying that because they are of the opinion that they will have all those people out by August 31st. I mean, you do 20,000 a day, you got another 7 days, that's 140,000. So what we heard was they believe they can complete the mission by August 31st. What I and several other members pressed them on was, let's place the emphasis on completing the mission and not necessarily an artificial deadline.
Okay. One thing I wanted to ask you, Congressman, is there did not appear to be a great deal of consultation with leadership in Congress, either Democratic or Republican leadership in Congress, about what is a very fateful, important decision for the United States of America. Was there more consultation with the White House than we know about?
I wish I could say that was the case, but I think that is a fairly accurate statement. I have been disappointed in the level of involvement with the White House National Security Team and Congress in the lead-up to the decision on Afghanistan. Now, I will say Chairman Milley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, called me probably a week and a half ago. How many days ago is this now? Probably August 13th, August 14th or so. He called me and told me that they were going to make the decision to send troops back in light of the Taliban takeover to secure the evacuation. But prior to that, I think it is very accurate to say that the White House National Security Team, they certainly weren't in touch with me and most of my other colleagues. I'm the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. That was disappointing, and it is a point I have made several times to many people in the administration.
Well, thank you for making that point. It's horrifying, frankly. I mean, do you think that it's possible that for the future, and there will be future crises, of course, that they can begin working together with leaders of both parties? Because otherwise, we're just going to have this polarizing reaction that we appear to be having here.
I certainly hope so. Now, I do want to point out I ultimately, the decision to withdraw from Afghanistan is one that I supported. And I heard from my constituents loud and clear that after 20 years, you know, our effort to stand up an Afghan government that could replace the Taliban, it wasn't working. And how could we ask people to continue on that mission? So I think ultimately President Biden and President Trump made the same decision as well. I don't agree with every aspect of either president's decisions along that line. But the amount of commitment, the amount of troops that we would have to throw in, the war that we would have to continue to have fought, I don't think would have been the right policy choice.
There are a number of other people. I mean, General David Petraeus, who was, of course, he was head of the CIA, and he was general in charge of our operations in Afghanistan for some time. He believes that it was a sustainable mission without that kind of major commitment of troops. And there are other people arguing it back and forth. What do you think right now with all of the threats facing Afghan women and others, facing the world with the idea of the Taliban encouraging radical forces in Pakistan, which is a major regional power, with all of that going on, what do you think is the top priority to limit the damage?
Yeah, there's two separate issues there. First of all, is General Petraeus' point about whether or not we could have sustained that effort without much cost. I think he's pure D wrong about that. I respect the optimism, but we've been doing this for 20 years, and everyone forgets that President Trump negotiated a ceasefire with the Taliban. So for the last, at this point, 24 months or 22 months, the Taliban have not been attacking U.S. forces or our allies. On May 1st, that would have changed if we hadn't agreed to pull out. So I think it's pie in the sky to imagine that somehow we could have hung out in Afghanistan without the Taliban attacking us. If, in fact, it was a stable option. You know, everyone says, well, we've been in South Korea for 70 years. Well, yeah, but nobody's shooting at us in South Korea. If there was an option to stay in Afghanistan, to work with the Afghan government in a stable atmosphere, that would have been one thing. But right now, I think a lot of critics are putting up a false choice. They're like, oh, we could have stayed and it would have been fine. Instead, we left. And if that was the choice, sure. That wasn't the choice. That Taliban moving forward, the attacks were coming. We would have had to put more troops in and continue to fight a very bloody war. And towards what end? 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What would have been different? So I may not agree with every decision leading up to the drawdown, but I don't think we should kid ourselves about this. That somehow there was an option where we could have stayed without paying a terribly high cost. Now, the second part of your question is, so what do we do now? Well, what we do now is we need to develop a counterterrorism strategy for South Asia. Now, we have counterterrorism strategies in Yemen and Somalia and West Africa and Libya and the Philippines, in a whole lot of places where we don't have an occupying military force. There are options to do that. But we definitely need to develop those options because the threat is real, as it is in a number of other places.
That's Congressman Adam Smith. Your statement is excellent in making the very clear case that you do believe that there have been very big problems with the way this has been handled, the whole decision to remove troops. But the basic decision to remove troops and end the military participation by the United States against the Taliban is one that you support. Congressman Smith's statement is posted up at michaelmedved.com. We will be right back with more on some of the immediate problems and some of the long-term problems, including that matter of 150 nuclear weapons in Pakistan. That and more on The Michael Medved Show. Waiting for an announcement by President Biden. He's supposed to be coming up to the microphone at any moment. We'll go to him if we can. And he's going to be basically announcing that 3 days from now, actually it's more than that, it's a week from now, the 31st of August, everybody's coming home. No more American presence there. They don't want a hostage situation. There are various sources that say the Taliban don't want a hostage situation. And basically, the yesterday, Jen Psaki, White House press spokesman, who is back from whatever mini vacation she was taking, she was asked in her White House press briefing by Peter Doocy of Fox about whether there are going to be Americans who are going to be stranded if we bring our troops home on the 31st. This is clip four. Listen.
By pulling the troops before getting these Americans who are now stranded. Does he have a sense of that?
First of all, I think it's irresponsible to say Americans are stranded. They are not. We are committed to bringing Americans who want to come home home. We are in touch with them via phone, with them via text, via email, via any way that we can possibly reach Americans to get them home if they want to return home.
There are no Americans stranded is the White House's official position on what's happening in Afghanistan.
I'm just calling you out for saying that we are stranding Americans in Afghanistan when we have been very clear that we are not leaving Americans who want to return home. We are going to bring them home. And I think that's important for the American public to hear and understand.
Okay. This is in direct contradiction to what other leading Democrats are saying and to what the news is reporting today about the president's decision. Because, again, saying that we're going to make sure we get every single American out is not necessarily compatible in any way with saying that, yeah, we're sticking to the timeline. We've agreed with the Taliban and we're going to take everybody home by the 31st of August. In fact, this morning, this is clip 11, Jeremy, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Adam Schiff, this is not Congressman Adam Smith, who was just on our show, but this is Adam Schiff, who played a prominent role in both impeachments of President Trump. You may remember he is by no means a conservative. He's no means a hardliner or a critic of Democrats or any kind of partisan in this way. He's a Democrat. It's Adam Schiff. And listen to what he says after he received the same classified briefing that Adam Smith talked about earlier. This is clip 11.
I think it's possible, but I think it's very unlikely, given the number of Americans who still need to be evacuated, the number of SIVs, the number of others who are members of the Afghan press, civil society leaders, women leaders. It's hard for me to imagine all of that can be accomplished between now and the end of the month.
Okay. He was asked very directly about whether we could get everybody out and safe by August 31st. And the answer from Adam Schiff is no. And listen to this. Today, somebody else who is not a partisan Republican by any stretch of the imagination, Andrea Mitchell from NBC News, had this to say about an American member of the embassy staff. Listen, this is clip 9.
A colleague reported that on Saturday a cable came here. A memo was sent to Afghan staff at the embassy on Wednesday inviting them to head to the airport, and that it was so difficult for them to, the physical situation was simply impossible. And that some staff reported being separated from children. They said, quote, it would be better to die under the Taliban's bullet than face the crowds again. One staff member said they felt betrayed, that it was it undermined their sense of dignity, their loyalty. And this is embassy staff who should have been presumably prioritized, that they were left behind when the evacuation took place, basically.
Andrea, what I can tell you.
I do have a follow-up.
Sure. I will tell you that I just came from a meeting with the Secretary about an hour and a half ago. And this was something that he proactively raised in that setting. And he also conveyed it was something that he has discussed with the President and offered that he and the President are completely on the same page.
Okay, that was the State Department spokesperson, Ned Price, today, who was taking her questions. But when you hear about the horrors at the airport and the fact that the Taliban now are telling people not to come to the airport, that there's no passable way to get there, how are those people who are left behind supposed to continue to get out? And I know they took out 22,000 people yesterday, and they're taking out more today, and they say they have planes taking off now about every 45 minutes. Great. But here's CNN's Jake Tapper, who fact-checks Jen Psaki for saying that there are no Americans stranded in Afghanistan right now. Clip 18.
And I understand the White House wanting to reassure the nation that all Americans will ultimately be evacuated, but there are no doubt Americans who feel stranded in Afghanistan right now.
Yeah, some of this appears to be, as you point out, a message of reassurance, and some appears to be parsing words on what exactly is stranded. Jen Psaki appearing to say that if you want to get out, the U.S. will go to great lengths to get you out. But the Pentagon has acknowledged in a limited number of cases, according to what we've heard, that there have been Americans who are having trouble getting through Taliban checkpoints, who are having difficulties and problems getting to Kabul International Airport. And that appears to be what she's not acknowledging here, that there are Americans having issues.
Okay, and those issues are very profound. We're going to be speaking to an acclaimed photojournalist. Her name is Lindsay Addario. She is actually written about the return of the Taliban and what that will mean for Afghan women. There is no ability for Afghan women, right, basically to escape what is likely to be a living hell. A headline, American woman who's trapped in Afghanistan made a tearful call to GOP Congresswoman. Please help me. So what would that situation be like? There's another story about Afghan refugees who managed to sneak, walk, show up at Turkey, but were turned away because Turkey won't allow them to come in. What happens to Afghan civilians, particularly those who supported the cause of sanity and freedom and democracy in the United States? What happens now? We'll talk to Lindsay Addario coming right up on the MedVed Show. On the Michael Medved Show, one of the other recent headlines was that certainly got our attention here was a kinder, gentler Taliban beat woman to death for not cooking. Somebody who has seen the Taliban operating close up, 2 decades she spent covering Afghanistan, is a photojournalist, very acclaimed photojournalist, actually winner of a MacArthur Genius Grant, which is an amazing distinction, particularly for somebody in photojournalism, and wartime photojournalism is what she specializes in. Her acclaimed book, and it is a spectacular book to look at with images that are unforgettable, is Of Love and War, and the New York Times bestselling memoir, It's What I Do. Lindsay Addario has also written a devastating, unforgettable, indelible piece for The Atlantic called The Taliban's Return is Awful for Women in Afghanistan. Lindsay, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Having been there and experienced this firsthand, the one thing that is today is just leaving me almost speechless is that we have such a classic, obvious conflict where the world seems powerless. The whole world, not just the United States, but the United States is the most powerful country in the world. We seem powerless to step in a very, very direct conflict between, if not between good and evil, at least between innocence and evil.
Look, I think our window to step in is closed. You know, we were there for 20 years. This was always the risk that the Taliban might come back if we didn't pull ourselves out in a more strategic way. And leave sort of a government, the Afghan government basically dissolved as the Taliban made its way in. And I think it's not our responsibility to prop the country up for another 20 years. No one believes that the United States should have stayed that long. But I think there was probably a better way to evacuate the country. And I think the Taliban is brutal. I was there. I made three trips when it ruled the country in 2000 and 2001. And I've seen the way women are forbidden from leaving their home without a male escort. They could not be educated. They could not work outside of the home. And this is essentially what the country is facing once again after 20 years of progress and development.
And again, what you talk about there, just the domestic brutality that seems to be part of life under that government, which does nothing to curb it or stop it.
Well, I mean, look, Afghanistan is a tribal culture, deeply conservative, and I think it's also a country that has been at war for over 40 years. So if you look at, people, civilians, people who are in the military, have literally been witnessing violence for 40 years. And obviously that violence perpetuates violence inside of the home. You know, people have post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, it's not... that is pretty clear. And I think it's very difficult for me as an American woman who has grown up and been afforded so many freedoms and opportunities to be there and photograph women who express the fact that they are beaten often. Not everyone, but there were a lot of women that I have interviewed over the years who were abused, by their own family members. And it is very difficult to see that.
Especially if it's normative at all. And what your piece talks about in terms of is not just rolling back what progress had been made, and there had been some, as your piece makes clear, under the Afghan government that we were supporting, schools that had opened. Are those schools, do you think, going to be closed?
Well, look, I mean, there was tremendous progress over the last 20 years. There were schools, there were women and Afghans working as TV presenters, as journalists, as doctors, lawyers, human rights activists, parliamentarians. I mean, there has been extraordinary progress. But I think the big question is, will the Taliban roll back all those gains? And I think right now, while the international community is still there and until the 31st of August, the Taliban is on its best behavior. They are being very careful about making sure they have whatever support they can garner from the international community. And so we won't really know how they want to, quote unquote, govern the country until everyone is evacuated.
There's one point that David Petraeus makes, and he was there, of course, with our military.
They're
broke. The Taliban will not be able to pay for much of anything. Do you think that they will allow some NGOs, some non-governmental organizations that provide relief and medical care and just basic life-saving? Will the Taliban likely to allow that from the West?
Yes, I believe they will. In fact, when I was there in 2000 and 2001, there were very few foreign embassies there, if any. I think, you know, there definitely was not an American embassy there. But the United Nations was there, UNHCR, which deals with refugees. There were landmine organizations. There was a community of organizations to help Afghans in the humanitarian sense. I think what is so tragic is that all of the thousands of people we are seeing clamoring at the airport are people who have been educated and who have served, many of them have served in roles in the government, and they're leaving. So we're seeing a massive brain drain of Afghans. And so who will be left to run that country? Well, we also don't want to look at the aspect that Afghanistan is going to be reliant on aid groups for the foreseeable future, which is really the reality.
And in terms of the idea of a kinder, gentler Taliban, you're saying they're on their good behavior until a week from now, August 31st. But do you think there's a chance that they could change and show a more responsible side than they showed when you were in the country before?
I mean, I'm very skeptical. I mean, when I was there in 2000 and 2001, it was very safe. I mean, the Taliban came to power in 96 because they promised security, and they did deliver on security. So I think that's important to note. Do I think that they will suddenly be liberal Taliban? No, I don't think so. I'm not sure. You know, there is a lot of pressure on them to allow women and girls to continue going to school and to allow them to continue working. But the Taliban has said they will allow that, but within the parameters of Sharia law, which is law according to the Quran. And their interpretation of that is incredibly conservative.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, Lindsay, that here we are, it's 2021, and we're talking about girls being permitted to go to school.
I mean, it's depressing. It's unbelievable that we even have to have this conversation, especially after the billions of dollars we have spent in Afghanistan.
Yeah, people say it's a total of $1 trillion. I do appreciate your work and your perspective. Do you anticipate that there is the real possibility of renewed warfare on a serious scale?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a military expert. I have certainly spent many, many years embedding with our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I've been lucky to meet with, you know, General Petraeus and others. But I think, I think frankly, Americans and certainly President Biden, they are tired of violence, and I don't think that you'll see, at least on our end, a big military escalation.
Were there other possibilities, which we will get to? Lindsay Addario, so much appreciate your work. Her piece from Atlantic, we've linked to it at our website, michaelmedved.com. The moment that we're living through, I honestly believe we're going to all recall and remember. I mean, it's first of all, we're coming up to the 20th anniversary of September 11th, which is just that's heart stirring anyway. But then with this going on and the understanding about how indispensable the United States is to any sense of order at all. And we're going to be speaking to John Bolton later about the Pakistan problem, because the chances of Pakistan with multiple nuclear weapons, we're very concerned, and rightly so, about Iran developing one nuclear weapon. Pakistan, they say, has at least 150. And their relationship with India and the chances of the Islamic radical elements in Pakistan being inspired by the Taliban victory, all of this And then with the level of incompetence that has been shown by Team Biden, there was even a piece by Tevi Troy, who's a presidential historian, who says Biden has to clearly, after the handling of this, which has been appalling, to learn from the example of President Kennedy. President Kennedy had the early disaster with the Bay of Pigs, and then he realized that part of the problem with that was he just was surrounded by yes men. He was surrounded by people who didn't want to say, well, Mr. President, this might be a problem to do that. How about we do it this way? And he set that up in time to handle the Cuban Missile Crisis far more effectively, where it really counted saving the world from nuclear war. Now, look, do we have a possibility of nuclear war coming up here between India and Pakistan, and partially, potentially involving North Korea or a Chinese attack on Taiwan? We have a world of danger. And what we've seen so far from the team of Joe Biden and Jake Sullivan as National Security Advisor and Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, none of these folks have looked any good at all. For instance, Jake Sullivan. Now, I know he's a bright guy, but listen to what he said about Joe Biden's clear-eyed vision on handling this. This is clip 20.
And in his speech in April, and in his speech in July, and in comments he has made since then, he has been clear that that could mean difficult times in Afghanistan. We have been clear-eyed about this from the start.
We have been clear-eyed about this from the start? In that speech in April that he's talking about, you know what Biden said? He said, quote, we will cannot conduct a hasty rush to the exit. We'll do it responsibly, deliberately, and safely. And now there are people who are desperate to get out, who may not be able to hastily escape this looming hell on earth in the next 7 days. This is just appalling. And then John Kirby, who is the State Department spokesperson, he had this to say when he was asked by a CNN reporter about exactly how many Americans have been evacuated. Listen, clip five.
You said you have the ability
to tell the American people how many Americans it has evacuated from Afghanistan, and if you cannot, can you please explain, not the denominator, why can't you just say the number?
Barbara, I think we're just going to leave it at several thousand right now, and I understand that's not a satisfying answer to you. I would tell you that that the number literally changes almost by the hour.
So does everything else.
I understand, Barbara. We're going to leave it at several thousand for right now.
That's how we're going to leave it. And then he subsequently asked how many State Department registered Americans. These are people who have to sign up with the embassy and through the State Department. How many registered Americans have been evacuated? And this is what he said on that clip six.
Ones who have registered have more or less than half of the Americans who have registered. Have they been evacuated?
I do not know. I don't. You'd have to go to the State Department for what they think they have on the registry. But I think even they would tell you, Idris, that that is an imperfect database.
Okay, why go up there if you don't have any information about the number of people? And it doesn't have to be exact. And then this is a reporter to Kirby, saying that, well, you've said you have the ability to get all the Americans out who want to leave. This is clip 10. Listen.
And you said you have the ability to get all Americans out who want to leave, and you said several thousand. Do you have a percentage for how many Americans have been removed? Without giving a number, have more than half been removed?
I can't give you that number, Idris, because I don't think there's a perfect number that we know with certainty of all Americans in Afghanistan. There's no requirement. You can't force an American when they go to a foreign country to tell you that they're there. And we encourage them to do that. The State Department has a robust set of communication vehicles at their disposal, to, especially in a country like Afghanistan. We want to know when Americans are there, but they don't, you know, they don't have to tell us. So that's why it's difficult for us to give you, you know, the denominator here. How many are there?
Okay, and then he concludes this brilliant press briefing with this concluding statement, clip 7.
I would just tell you that several thousand, we know, several thousand Americans have been safely evacuated from Afghanistan. I understand that's not the degree of specificity that you want, but that is as far as I'm going to be able to go today, several thousand. And to include, I would, you know, several hundred just yesterday were able to get onto the airport for follow-on transportation. So it's every day we are moving Americans out of the country.
Yeah, not that many days left to move those Americans out of the country. When we come back, I can basically cover it now because it's just so devastating. Biden approval ratings dip in new public opinion poll. Biden's approval rating dropped under 50% for the first time in NBC News polling. The president's approval rating stood at 49% approval, 48% disapproval in the Gallup poll conducted August 2nd to 17th. It's gotten much worse. Just a quarter of those questioned in a new NBC News survey conducted August 14th, 17th said they approved of the job Biden was doing, handling the situation in Afghanistan, 60% disapproving. In other words, the way people feel about Afghanistan, which is important to the American people, important to the American nation, is 60 to 25, they disapprove of the president's handling. Maybe that's why he's so late for his own press announcement today. The president's approval rating on combating the coronavirus pandemic stood at 53% in the news survey. That was down from 69% of approval in April. And handling the economy, it's an even split. And then NBC News covers Biden's job ratings decline amid COVID surge, Afghan withdrawal in NBC News poll. The among a narrower sample of registered voters, Biden's current job rating stands at 50% approval, 48% disapproval, down from April when it was 51 to 43. In other words, it has produced, NBC says, a summer of discontent for Biden. That is, quote, the promise of April. This is Jeff Horwitt of Heart Research Associates, who conducted this poll for NBC. The promises of April has led to the peril of August. It is the domestic storm, COVID's Delta wave, that is causing more difficulties at this stage here at home and for President Biden. There is one area of unanimity and one alone, which is that a overwhelming majority of Americans right now believe that we are headed in the wrong direction. Only 29% of Americans think the country is headed in the right direction. All of this in the midst of a pandemic and drive for more vaccinations. The latest on that and